Welcome to the Inspired Women Podcast, where your hosts connect you with inspirational women from around the globe and chat about topics relevant to today's modern woman. Here are your hosts.
Hi, I'm Megan Hall, the founder of Megan Hall Motivation. I help busy working women overcome the overwhelm of life by teaching them habits and routines that will help them thrive. And today I'm here with my BFF and wonderful co-host, Jules.
Good morning. I'm Jules. I'm the CEO of Julie Clyde Creative. We help female entrepreneurs distinguish themselves from the everyday logos and brands. Today we're talking about Megan's favorite subject of being a military spouse.
I just think there's a lot of misunderstandings about military life and military spouses, and I want to put it out there so the world can hear. So this isn't just for military spouses, so don't shut this off. You're like, oh crap, I'm not a military spouse. You might find something very valuable and useful out of this, considering this is episode 11, by the way, in case anybody wants to look at the show notes, inspiredwomenpodcast.com. That's where you can find them. All links and everything like that is up there. But there is a lot of misconceptions about military life. I mean, I had them before I became a military spouse. And I meet people a lot that I tell them I'm a military spouse, and they just have all these misconceptions of crazy military spouses, or our spouses make so much money. All of these things that they think go on, and they don't see the struggles that go on behind the scenes. So that's really why I wanted to. And this airs the week after our interview with Casey McCoy airs, and she is a military spouse. So it's a perfect synergy of episodes going up. But yeah, with as far as military spouse life, you always hear like military spouse are crazy, or they have that word dependa. Have you heard that, Jules?
Nope.
You haven't heard about the dependapotamus?
No. That's an American thing.
It's an American thing. But dependapotamus is basically an overweight military spouse who doesn't work and who just pretty much sucks the life out of their spouse. I'm not even kidding. They have like a whole Facebook page about this. Really? Like I was following it for a while, but then another military spouse contacted me, was like, you know, people can see that you're liking that, and you have to think about what that says about you. And I'm like, oh yeah, I just thought it was kind of entertaining. But I mean, because I've definitely met that stereotype of military spouse. So I'm not saying they don't exist. What I'm saying is majority of military spouses are not that stereotype.
Wow. See, I know there's a huge difference between American military and Australian military. Like, we don't have the Navy exchanges, and we don't get 10% discounts or military discounts back home. And there's a lot of difference, especially like moving wise, that I know the European military spouses, some of them get given their personal chef and they get house cleaners, and they get treated very differently to how we get treated. And I only know that because an American person said, you must get a chef. And I was like, no, yeah, the French get them and the Germans get them, so you should get them too. And I was like, you know, I'm from Australia. And he was like, yeah, that's in Europe. And I was like, no, we're in the South Pacific. He's like, yeah, you're part of NATO. No, that's North. Yep, fine, we're part of NATO. I was like, but there is like huge differences between the different militaries and what they get in terms of services and help. And I know Australia is very, very different to America. You guys get awesome extra bits.
So anybody who doesn't know about the world and how it lays out and has a map, because it's really easy, just Google the world map. Australia is closer to Japan.
We're closer to Antarctica than anywhere else.
Yeah, well, that's true. That too. You're way out there. But you're not even close to Europe at all.
No, it's like opposite side of the globe, north to south as well. Like, it's just polar opposite.
So much fun. Oh my God. No, and it does vary. Like, other American military cannot drink on their ships, but other militaries can have drinks on their ships. Apparently the Russians drink vodka. So
so you want to go and meet some Russians?
I'm going to go meet some Russians. Although that probably wouldn't go over very well, because apparently we're not very friendly with them. So
the French are unreal. We've had cocktail parties with them in Sydney. And it was so funny because Chris and I were only sort of a year back together, and I made him go up to one of the French stewards that were serving everybody, I said, go up and say, je suis un canard au chocolat. And he went, okay. So he went over and said it. And this guy looked at him and was like, pardon? And he said it again. And the guy started laughing. And Chris said to me, what did you tell him to, or what did you tell me to say to him? I went, that you're a chocolate duck. And he was like, oh my God.
That was so much fun. You're the first foreign military spouse that I've ever met in my entire life. And I remember we were standing in your kitchen and we were chatting just about like life in general. And I'm like, oh, your spouse is in the military too? This is cool. This is really cool. But I mean, the down and dirty like ins and outs of it are the same. Like the stresses we go through with deployments and, you know, separations and dealing with other military spouses who some of them are batshit crazy. And I'm not even kidding. But most of them are normal. Like anything else, the small portion of craziness overwhelms the rest of it. And that's why you always hear about these bad military spouses or negative military spouses or these military spouses that leave their spouses while they're on deployment and go fool around. And ooh, good. This is a fun story for the podcast. So Jeremy told me this story. Super inappropriate. Shut this off if you're listening with your kids. But Jeremy told me this story that there was a boat. I don't remember if it was a submarine or if it was a bigger boat. It was American. And apparently every time the guys would go out, I want to say it was the bigger sub. So you have the fast attacks, which is what Jeremy's on. And then they have what they call the boomers. I forgot what the number is, but they're bigger. And they so half the crew goes out for like a certain amount of time and then they come back and then the other half goes out. So it's very regular about how often they're out. Well, apparently why the guys were out, there were this ring of spouses that would have a prostitution ring. And how they would tell people that they were open for business and their husband was out is they would put like a soap box, like a detergent box, laundry detergent box in their window. So it was the way of telling people that they were open for business and their spouse was gone. Well, apparently while they are on deployment, I'm not even kidding, on their deployment, somebody leaked it out to them. Like somebody sent an email, somebody said something, and they came back early. And all the spouses were kind of like in shock that they're coming back early, but excited because they're like, oh yeah, they're coming back. They weren't so excited when they got off the boat. Apparently, the captain got off the boat and, like, nailed his wife in the face.
Really?
And the rest of the spouses, like, dispersed quickly. The ones that were guilty because they knew, oh, crap, like, somebody leaked it out. So, yeah, there was a prostitution ring. Anyway, but that's the rare things, you know, that people like think military spouses are like have all these things wrong, like they cheat on their spouse. Like there are bars around here that apparently if you go to, and I didn't know this, I went to one and there was guys coming up here and talking to me and I'm like, but my spouse is in the military, I have a ring on, hello. And Jeremy's like, no, they think that like spouses that go, they're looking for something on the side. I'm like, you have to be kidding me right now. He's like, no, I'm not. He's like, so when you're telling them my husband's in the Navy, they're not thinking that you're saying that like, hey, my husband's in the Navy, like, I'm very proud. They're thinking that you're saying that to give them like the hint that, yeah, you're looking for some strange. I'm like, what?
That's so wrong.
I know. Oh my God. But this is like, also, again, it is not the majority that's like that. It's a few bad eggs that give the rest of us a bad rap. And I went to a military spouse entrepreneur conference called Embark. It's through the MilSpo project. And a lot of us said we really liked that conference because we had all been burnt by other spouses who were mean to us. And it was so, you know, nice and everybody was so kind and everybody was so accepting that I was like, this is what this is about. You know, and I met Casey through Compass. Compass is another place that I saw that there was actually normal military spouses because I had been burnt by so many. But people have that bad idea of military spouses. They either think that we are just in it for all of the perks of being a military spouse. Yeah, because I totally married my husband because I want health insurance.
Yeah, we don't even get that.
I know, you guys don't get any.
We don't get any of that. Like, I'm sure that there's a community of something back home that helps you when your husband or partner is deployed. But I've got to admit, I'm 10 years of Chris or more, we're more now, 15 years of Chris going away. not once have we ever been contacted by them or sent anything or communicated with. And it was the same coming to the States. When we got here, thank God Heatherton came down from DC, which I've said a few times, but really thank God she came down, because we were literally thrown into a foreign country with no support, no network. There was no one calling to say, what do you need? How can we help you? Or anyone here that was able to help us, because the guy that left, that handed over with Chris, was a single guy who was also born American. So he knew a lot about the area. He knew a lot about how it worked and where to shop and where to go. But he didn't communicate that. So we literally got left on our backsides to go, off you go, have fun, just work it out as you go. And I was like, we had to find schools and cars and furniture and all that stuff. And I was just like, I felt like I was drowning at times. But thankfully, yeah, Heatherton came down and going, I've said it before about going into Food Lion and going, where's all the fresh food? How am I going to feed my children? Like, it was such a culture shock. And she just kind of carried on with the crazy, and she was my big support network, like just for the initial. She's my friend now. Like, obviously we've been really good friends, but, yeah, it was just, I can't imagine going into another foreign country even and not having someone there to support. And even now Chris and I talk about it and say there really is a big lack of support for the Virginia area from our perspective, that you just, it's like, oh, well, you're down there, so good luck. And I'm sure I'm not allowed to say that, but it's true. That's how we feel, and that's how we found it down here as well. It is very disconnected from the bulk of Australians that are coming over to the US.
And Jules and I are both Navy spouses, so we can't tell you the perspective of an Army spouse or, you know, a Air Force spouse. You guys have Air Force, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. It's a different country. But we don't.
We have electricity, too.
Do you have electricity? I had no idea.
We got it last week.
No, but we can't tell you the perspective of the people that, but I know personally as American military spouse in the submarine force, wherever Jeremy gets stationed, he's going to get stationed near base. Like, there's always going to be that support. Like, but there are people out there that, like you, Jules, even American, that they might get stationed overseas and it might not be near a base. They might just be a dignitary that's there to, you know.
Yeah.
Show face, basically.
Well, you've got, like, the foreign service workers, and you've got the ambassadors, and you've got, like, consulate and that sort of thing as well. And I know a lot of the, like, ambassador side of it, they don't get the same support that, like, the embassy ambassadors get or military people get, and they lose a lot of the entitlements that the military people get because they're not considered military and they're not considered part of the embassy so much, but they're still expected to go and do the foreign service. And it's been really interesting, like, meeting all these people and learning from them over the years, because I just think, oh wow, I really don't have it as bad as, you know, A, B and C. Or, you know, it's really interesting to sit back and talk to them about their experiences, especially traveling so much.
It's so easy for us to be like, oh, it's one size fits all and it all looks the same, because we're both Navy spouses, shouldn't it be the same? But it's not. Like, even amongst the American Navy and different communities, it's different. You have the Navy SEALs are completely different than the submarine force, and the submarine force is completely different than, you know, the carriers and the frigates and the helos. And, you know, Casey's spouse, he works on helicopters. So he's different. He's in a squadron. So he's not actually technically attached to a specific boat. Like, he's in that squadron. So they're in a different community than the rest of us. So even amongst the different branches, there's different communities that are different. So when you meet one military spouse, you can't say, I met one, so I've met them all. You haven't. I mean, that person might have issues. They might be the dependaponimist or whatever it is. Or they might be somebody that's really normal. I know people who you wouldn't know unless they told you that they're a military spouse. They don't paraded around. They don't. I'm very public about the fact that I'm a military spouse. Yeah, Jules is more of the person that's more like laid back, and unless you've talked to her or you happen to catch a snippet of a picture that she posted, you don't know that she's a military spouse. But me, in the beginning, I didn't want to be one. I didn't want to be connected with that sort of community, especially after being burnt so many times. I did not want anything to do with it. But recently I have found such amazing people through the military spouse community that I'm more embracing it and just being careful at who I open up to and who trust in my gut. Trusting my gut. I wrote a whole article on my blog about trusting your gut. I'll add it in the show notes. I really did, about how you need to really just, when you're around people, and like Casey said in her podcast, is, you know, you might meet them once and it might be an off day. So give them a second chance to see if it really was an off day or not. But trust the fact that you're probably right. If your gut's saying no, no, run the opposite way, that you probably should. But you can't just judge one military spouse or even a group of military spouses against the military spouses as a whole, because military spouse entrepreneurs are going to be different than military spouse, you know, stay at home moms or even stay at home wives. Because sometimes with this, and it's not because they're dependent eponymouses, it's because with this life, sometimes it's hard because we move around so much to get a job and to stick with a job. And as I was a stay-at-home mom for a long time, and one of the biggest reasons I love being an entrepreneur is I can still be here when my kid's sick and playing Minecraft right now. But it's hard because what if my husband's deployed and my kids get sick? I'm the person they're going to call. I'm the person that's going to have to call off of work. And eventually a job, as wonderful as they might be and as accepting of military spouses as it might be, I have four kids. I'm going to call off a lot. And eventually they're going to draw the line and say, you got to go because you're never here, you know, especially during the wintertime. So that's a lot of times it's not out of choice that military spouses stay at home. It's out of necessity. It is because you really don't have that option, because a lot of military spouses, I'm blessed, I've been in this area for 6 years, but that's unusual. A lot of times they're bouncing and bouncing. I mean, look at you, Jules, you bounced across the world.
Yeah, that was a big bounce.
That's a big bounce.
Okay, so a lot of the Aussies, I actually actively stayed away from a lot of the spouses, and it was probably more about me than about them, but the ones that I have connected with and I am friends with, they're really lovely people. But you do meet those women, or men as well, that go around and being a military spouse is their label and their badge, and they wear their husband's rank, and it then lets them feel like they're entitled to more, or they're better than you, or, you know, like they're not the people that just go, oh, yeah, he's in the military. Like people say to me, what does Chris do? And I genuinely don't know. I know he goes to work and he comes home each day, but beyond that, we've made an active decision not to talk about it for many reasons. And it's not he's in the secret squirrel service or anything. It's
Jeremy
just,
is.
Yeah, but that's right. Back home, a lot of the guys aren't able to talk about what they do. And I don't ever want to put Chris in the position where he might say something. And I don't want to be in the position that I know anything either. Which is kind of scary. But we had warnings in our first year here about the wonderful group of militants that we all don't like to talk about coming and knocking on our door. There was a genuine warning out that they were going to come and target spouses while the husbands were at work. And I was like, oh, awesome. That makes me feel really safe. But if that had happened, I genuinely wouldn't be able to tell them anything.
I removed all of this. I used to have like my proud Navy wife stuff on my van and the silent service sticker on my van, which, I mean, if anybody's
that's advertising.
Yeah, that's advertising. My husband's not only in the Navy, but he's in the submarine fleet. So hello. But so I took it all off my van because I didn't want some stranger to follow me home because I saw that. Now, I put it out there on Facebook. I put it on my Facebook business page.
Yeah.
So people actively know that I'm a military spouse. I'm not going to hide it. But I also try to like blur out his boat's name on his hat if he takes a picture, because I don't want to make it easy for people. I don't want to, you know, make it too easy for you guys if you want to stalk us to figure out what they are. But you were talking about people wearing rank, and you and I had a conversation when we first met because I'm an enlisted spouse and you're an officer spouse, and there's always this disconnect that officers spouse are better than enlisted spouse, not you, Jules. But there's a lot of them.
I was going to say, I can't give a I'm not allowed to say that.
I know.
It doesn't worry me. It's people to me.
For you.
I know what you mean.
But a lot of times, not a lot of times, but there will be times that you'll meet the ones that wear their spouse's rank and are like, I'm better than you because I'm an officer spouse.
I met women at a decommissioning in Darwin, and I must have been early 20s, like 20, 21. And I remember sitting at this table with all the ex-captains of the of that ship and their partners. And I remember I had the mayor of the town that the ship was named after sitting next to me, and he was wonderful. We had really good talks all night, like, what did I do and where was I from? And one of the captains across the table, ex-captain, said, so what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm a student. And he genuinely, like, turned his nose up at me and went, oh, that's nice. Like, I was some welfare-seeking, like, gold-digging
Dependent.
Yeah, it was. It felt exactly like that. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And as I talked to the guy next to me, he said, you know, have you travelled and what have you done? And I said, you know, I'd been in the UK working for a year after high school, and that I'd started university a year later because I wanted the life experience and I wanted to travel. And he said, oh, where were you? And I said, I was down in Folkestone, which is just next to Dover. And this captain from the other side of the table was like, oh, I grew up in there. And I literally went, that's nice, and turned and kept talking to the mayor, and the mayor whispered to me, nicely done. And I was just like, that was so rude. And it was, for me being young, and he was late 60s, like, it was that whole disconnect of a generation. And I find that older generation really do that to people, and they prejudge people. So I went and sat with all the sailors' wives who got me incredibly drunk, but we had a really great night sitting up the back and talking and laughing. And Chris came over later and he's like, what are you doing? I went, I met three people, and this is Kate, and this is Leanne, and this is Lisa. And we had a great time. And Chris is like, I'm really glad that you moved away from that table and you're having a good time. And I was like, I had to. They're all so stuffy. And he was just dying of laughter by the end because we were just – I was so drunk because they – this is a military thing, but, you know, like you drink –
Well, they drink at military things.
But they fill it up. So yeah, you never know how much you've had. And I was – I was very young. I was a good drinker too, but I was so drunk when we went home that night. And I've realised that that's kind of a ongoing theme with military as well, that drinking's kind of a big part of being out. And mm-hmm. now being older, I don't drink as much. So at times I think, should I go? Are they going to think, especially from an Australian point of view, where alcohol seems to be a very big part of our culture, is if I don't drink, am I going to still fit in? Like, it's a bit, ooh, but... Now it's like, oh, well, I've met Megan, I don't care anymore. Like, it's like that, though. If they don't like me for me, that's okay. And I'm now in that space that I can say that and just be like, oh, well, it's your loss, not mine.
I tell people that all the time. And that's what I needed to realize, too, because I had one of the wives of Jeremy's last boat give me a talking to in front of a group full of women at our family readiness group about the fact that I had called the XO by his first name. Mind you, he had told me I could call him by his first name because I didn't know what to call him. I'm still relatively new military wife at the time, only a couple years in. I'm like, I don't know what to call you. And he's just like, call me, you know, his first name. And I was just like, okay. And then they heard me, overheard me say that to him. And they, like, literally weeks later, like, gave me a talking down how inappropriate it was. Because
what are you meant to call him?
Sir. I'm meant to call him sir.
And but you're not employed in the
military. No, I'm not. And Jeremy said to me, he said, if he told you to call him by his first name, you call him. If he introduces himself, my name is whatever, that's what you call him. He's like, the way I look at it is we're civilians, you and I. We're not military. Our spouses are military. If I met this person randomly out, I would not know that they're in the military. I would call them by their first name. It wouldn't matter what rank they are or if they're the freaking head of the freaking Navy. I wouldn't care. I would call them by their first name. Like,
I'm laughing because we've had two situations. One of them, we called the XO of Chris's ship Sexy Exy. And Mark knew that we did it, and he thought it was hysterical. And I really hope that he doesn't hear this or Chris shares it, but he knew that we called him Sexy Exy, and he thought it was awesome. He was an exchange crew or member who's now gone into the Aussie military. And the other time that it happened, I was at a function with Chris down on one of the big Navy bases in Australia. And I sat talking to this guy outside for hours. He was an older gentleman, and he was just so wonderful to talk to and open. And I was a bit sick of talking, you know, just the general rubbish inside. And I sat for hours, and Chris came back, like, outside to find me, and he was literally, like, kneeling at this guy's feet and kissing his ass. And I was like, what are you doing? And he goes, this is the commander of the Navy base. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry. And he's like, no. He goes, it's actually been really refreshing having someone to talk to as a person. And I was like, cool. And we just kept carrying on. But for Chris, he was a young officer, and he was like, oh, my God, she's talking to the chief of the base. And and I was just like, this is John. Do you want to meet John?
I'm such a friendly person that I don't care. I go, like, I'll have conversations. Of course, with the submarine fleet, it's different than a bigger fleet because it's so small. I do know all of these people. I do see them. Like, I mean, it's not like in a bigger boat where some spouses will never, ever meet the captain of their husband's boat. You know, like, carriers have thousands of people on it. You may never, ever meet the captain of a, you know, your husband's boat ship.
Oh, yeah.
But for submarines, you're talking about, like, the fast attacks are 150 people max. So I'm definitely going to meet them, and I have conversations. I don't care. I'm like, I talk to them about life and how they're doing and how their kids are doing, and I don't care if people think it's inappropriate. I think I'm being a friendly person, and they enjoy it.
But it's their job. It's not their...
It's not who they are.
It's not their person. Yeah. That's what I was trying to... Yeah. I'm glad you know my words better than I do.
They still have lives outside. They still have children and families and interests and hobbies and things that they like to do. Like, they're still people outside. It just baffles me, because if they were out in a normal everyday situation, then nobody would know that they're the captain of this boat. And actually, to be honest, most people would not care.
I know.
If you're not military, but most people don't care.
I know. And it's like saying, oh, he's the president of sales. Literally, it's just Navy sales instead of, like, selling stuff. But, you know, no one walks around with a title on their forehead saying, this is who I am and this is what I do. Because if we all did that, people would go, look at that dickhead over there. Like,
well, it's like when I was a Beachbody coach, and you had all these coaches that people, like, really looked up to, and they would literally, we'd go to the Beachbody coach convention, and people would, like, swarm these women. I mean, it was disgusting, because I'm like, these are, like, or even the celebrity trainers. Like, I follow Shalene Johnson, who does the Pio and Shalene Extreme and Turbo Fire and all that. I follow her on Snapchat and stuff. Now, if I saw her out in public, yes, I would know who she is, but she was literally talking on Snapchat about, like, half the time when I go places, nobody knows who I am. I'm not, like, this person that's such a huge celebrity that people know. And even with these top Beachbody coaches that everybody was fangirling over, they can go grocery shopping in a grocery store and people don't know who they are. Like, it's just a big deal to you. And you think, and I didn't care. I'd walk up to them and introduce myself, say hi, because to me, they're normal people. Okay, yeah. They make more money than me, and they were a bit more successful at what they were doing than I was. Oh, freaking well. It doesn't make them any better than I was. And that was really the mindset that's really helped me, not only as a military spouse, but as an entrepreneur, because I see these people that are doing bigger and better things than me. And a part of me is like, oh my God, I'm not good enough. But then I remember, okay, I just need time. Like, and I'll be there too. It's just like, the reason my husband's not an officer and he's enlisted, because he chose not to go to officer school. That's all what happened. Like, it's not like, it's not even a thing. Like, he was worse. His whole family was enlisted. And so he went enlisted because that was part of his bloodline.
You know, it doesn't make literally. Him any better or any worse than a person.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, that. You know, I get the grill down anytime I'm around military spouses. What does your husband do? What ship is he on? Man. Like, what is his rank? How long has he been in? And I'm just like, seriously, I don't care. Like,
that's why a lot of the time they're saying, I don't actually know. He just goes to work and comes home every day. Stifles a lot of that conversation. I think that might be part of the reason why I don't, but it doesn't matter what they do.
I know what he does. I don't know why he does. I know his, like, title, like, of what he does, but what he actually does, I have no idea. I don't know what he actually does because he can't tell me.
He goes to work every day and he comes home and he's happy and that.
This is how he explained it to me. He's like, think about you're in the kitchen. The microwave's off and the oven's off, but you have to stare at them in case they come on. They're probably not going to come on because they're off. But just in case they come on, you have to stare at them for hours just in case they come on. I'm like, That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. But why do you love your job again? He's like, I'm just trying to break it down to what I can tell you that I do. And I'm like, so you stare at stuff that's off to make sure it doesn't come back on? I don't get this.
It reminds me of the dog out of Up. And he's like, is it going to change? Is it going to change? Is it going to change? Oh, squirrel. I couldn't do that job. I take my hats off to so many of the guys on board the ships because there's so many things that I'd be like, I'd either fall asleep or get distracted or go and do something else.
I would not be able to do his job because I couldn't sit there for hours, like literally staring at a panel. Like that would not, because my mind would go here and here and up here and up here. And eventually that stuff that he's looking at is not supposed to turn on would turn on. And I'd be looking over here like squirrel.
So what do you find the hardest thing being a military spouse?
I think a lot of it is the fact that I can't tell my family crap, like, at all. Yeah. And they don't understand. They don't understand. They ask me questions that for the 1,000th time, I told them, I cannot tell you when my husband is coming home. I cannot tell you when he goes out to sea again. I cannot tell you what he does. I cannot tell you. I can tell you he's the person that makes the boat go.
He's the person that loves me too.
Yeah, he loves me, but I can't tell you. And there's so much you can't tell other people, even people who are military spouses, even people who are on the same boat. Like, there's so much that you can't tell, and it's really hard. But also see how it affects them sometimes, because sometimes it's really hard. And sometimes that time that they're away, and I know you spent way more time away from Chris than I have, Jeremy. That time away, it's not easy on a marriage.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter how long they spend away. It's tough for everybody for different reasons. Yeah.
Whether they're 2 weeks, 2 months, or freaking 2 years gone, which I'm pretty sure the American military has cut down, so nobody's gone for 2 years now.
Yeah.
Not unless they choose to be apart for 2 years. But it used to be that people could be gone for 2 years. But they've cut it down to where they've, like, minimized so that their deployments are shorter. So they're – because of these very things, because there's hard. It's hard whether they're gone for a little bit or a lot bit, or if they're in and out. Submarines, it's really easy for them to be in and out. It really is, because it's one boat. Hey, hello, we need you to go do this. Go do it. So they go in and out a lot, and it's hard because it's tough on the kids. It's tough on me. And that's I mean, that's the hardest thing for me. What's the hardest thing for you as a military spouse?
I think it didn't used to bother me before we had kids because I knew that he was Navy long before I married him, and I knew that that was what he did. Like, he would go away and he'd come back. And I really enjoy my independence as well. So having him gone meant that I could just get into my routine and do my thing. But once we had kids, I think the hardest thing was when you were exhausted and you didn't have a backup. When you're doing everything and you're running out of time, like, you need to do the groceries, but your kids also need to be going to school, doing the activities, doing the laundry, doing all the things. I think that was when it really started to hit home, when Taylor was able to talk and say, where's Dad? I miss Dad. Or she'd be screaming in my arms because he would come home on a weekend for a night or two. She'd be thrilled that he was coming home, and then he'd leave on the Sunday. And I could start to see her doing what I did of – she would shut down because she didn't want to have that interaction with him on a Sunday because she knew that he was going to go. So for us, I always made sure we went outside and we waved his car goodbye and we said, bye, Daddy. And from our house, we used to be able to see the highway as well. So we'd stand and I'd say, oh, look, there goes Dad's car. And she'd be crying or she'd be heartbroken, but then she'd get excited by Friday and she'd say, Daddy home? I say, Dad, he's coming home tonight. She goes, stay up. And I go, yeah, you can stay up. So she used to sit and she'd wait and wait and wait. And he'd come in. She'd just go, ah! So you get like the high and the low, but it was that in between. And I think him being away for shorter periods was so much harder because she knew he was coming back. And then she'd be so excited for at least a day and a half. And then she'd be like, oh, Daddy's going again.
Yeah.
And just be like heartbreaking over and over again.
It's hard for them. What would you say, what is the biggest misconception that people have about military spouses that you want to clarify? This is not the majority.
In Australia, Chris and I had a few people after we got married say, oh, well, you're set up for life. Like, you get all these discounts and you get all these wonderful things. You know, and he gets paid so well that you know, you're just sort of set. You know, like they had these assumptions that it was this glorious, glamorous life. And I remember sitting back and saying to one of them, it's actually not. I said, I don't think you realize, yes, he gets paid slightly more, but that was a choice that he made to go and serve our country. And I said, and he gets paid 24/7, which means he gets paid more because he works 24/7. We don't see him for weeks and months and years on end. And I said, and your husband goes to work and comes home every day. So you get to see him 24/7 almost. And that was probably the hardest misconception to talk to people about. I don't think they realize how damaging it can be for a relationship and how strenuous and like heartbreaking it can be as well. It's a really hard thing to kind of stand up and be part of. Like, I've got a girlfriend whose husband is very high up in like the secret squirrel stuff, and for her his deployments mean that he might be killed. Mm-hmm. And it's a realistic possibility. Like, he's the front line. So for her, him going away can be detrimental for all of them because they really genuinely don't know, is he going to be coming back? And I don't think people quite put that together, that these deployments aren't, they're going off to sail around or hike around or fly around and see all the beautiful things. It's actually they're going away to work and defend and to protect a country, whether it's your own or someone else's, that they may or may not agree with, but they do because that's what they're paid to go and do.
It's like Groundhog's Day. That's what I was told. It's like Groundhog's Day for them. They live the same day over and over and over again while missing their family and missing the people that they are. And they do. Sometimes they work for 24 hours. Something breaks on Jeremy's boat. He's got to be up until that is fixed because otherwise nobody's coming up. Like, people don't realize that sometimes they don't get the sleep because there's somebody's got to do the job. Somebody's got to do the hard things. And you're Australian Navy, we're American Navy, but our spouses are serving our countries to say, we're protecting your freedom. Like, people don't give them enough credit. They will spit on them. They will boo them. They'll bash them because they don't agree with whatever war we're fighting. That is not right. These are real people risking their lives. And it doesn't matter what they're in. Yes, some people are in a more high risk area and more likely to die. Mine is more less likely, but you think about it. If somebody sinks a submarine, it's not coming back up. Like, that's the harsh reality.
It's already underwater.
It's already underwater. Like, it's not coming back. Like, it's not like somebody's going to fall like a ship. Like, somebody's going to fall off the ship in a life raft and they're going to go. Like, it's not coming back. And that's a harsh reality for me. The likelihood of that happening are slim to none. But could it happen? Yes, it could happen.
I want to say as well, our police force and our medical professionals also deploy and they also go overseas. And they don't get all the extra bits that the military get, but they are risking their lives just as much as anyone else to go and do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if yours – does your police force deploy?
No.
Or do you have – are they part of the military? Yeah, we – I know a lot of the police guys that have been away, they come back with PTSD sometimes and they don't get the same support as the military guys do. But in my eyes, they kind of should be because they're – serving and doing the same as a military person would be doing. And for their families, it is just as hard and it is just as impactful as it is for us.
It even is for people that are military and don't deploy, that are in the front lines on the United States. I mean, think about it. They're getting in the cars every day and they don't know who they're going to pull over or what they're going to have to save somebody from. You know, firefighters, EMTs, police officers, they're going out and they don't get the same respect as the military does.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times people are like, police, oh, down with the police. Because one or a handful of bad eggs did something bad. It's not because they're all bad.
Yeah.
And if they weren't around, this world would be chaos. This America would be chaos. There are bad people out there that do bad things.
Yeah.
But we need to wrap this up because I have a call I have to get on. And,
I know, it's so exciting.
So it's so exciting. But we did want to just do this podcast to kind of like get it out there. The misconceptions. Do not judge every military spouse by the one you've met or the one you've heard about or the handful you have. Everybody's different. And please, for the love of goodness, be respectful of the people that are serving our country. We're not saying this because we're military spouses, but because we've seen a side of things that it is dirty and is risky. And these guys put their health on the line just to be able to protect these countries.
And women.
And women. And yeah, they're introducing women to the submarine fleet, which is going to be an interesting thing to watch go down. Yeah, I know. It's going to be interesting. I'm waiting to see the backlash of this. So,
yeah. That'd be really interesting.
It's going to be interesting. But yes, and men and women that are serving our countries and our police officers and EMTs and firefighters, because they also do amazing things as well. So we want you guys to just take that time and really reflect and know that, you know, there's more sides to it than what you just see. It's not glamorous. And sometimes it's really, really hard. And I don't judge a person that walks away from this life because I know how hard it can be.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
But thank you.
You should give them high fives and go, congratulations.
You have been released.
Freedom.
All right, guys. Well, I hope you'll check out our show notes. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Inspired Women Podcasts, we're everywhere. And Jules is Julie Clyde Creative or J. Clyde Creative everywhere.
Yep.
And I'm Megan Hall Motivation or Meg Hall Motivate everywhere. So have a good day, guys. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Inspired Women Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, write us a review, and share this out with your friends and family. See you next week.